everybody. This week we are talking about Scott Pilgrim, the new Netflix TV series. A very, very quick disclaimer. We spoil the whole show and the movie. So if you've not watched both of them, and I cannot stress enough, both of them, then don't say I didn't warn ya. Or maybe, you know, you're a rebel like that. Which, you know, good for you, man. Thanks for joining us for this conversation, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to In Media Buzz, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we will be discussing, I guess, both Scott Pilgrims.
Yeah, I think so.
We won't be talking about the graphic novels because I have not read them. Have you read them?
No, I have not. I've seen them in my high school library, and that is about as close as I got to them.
So our dear friend Sarah, who has appeared on previous episodes, one previous episode, it was the Nona one. When we lived together, she had, I believe, all of them, and I'd walk by them because her bookshelf was out in the hallway. This is a really story that's only interesting to me, so feel free to cut this. But her bookshelf was out in the hallway, and so every time when I walked to use the bathroom in our apartment, I'd walk by and I'd note them, and I'd be like, I should read those. I've heard good things, and I never did. Mm-hmm. So I have never read Scott Pilgrim. I've seen the movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and then we're also going to be talking about the Netflix series Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, because both actually have some queer moments in it, although the movie, it's very early 2000s in some ways, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not
it holds as, up. It holds
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it's not, I do think it's a little dismissive, like, Ramona's very dismissive of, like, her college experiences with Roxy in the movie, although it does have that line, like, where Ramona's like, I was bi curious, and Roxy's like, oh, I'm bi furious or whatever. That was a good line.
It was a good line. Well, to be fair, Ramona is very dismissive with everyone.
Yeah, and I mean, in the movie in particular, she is supposed to be kind of a jerk. Like, kind of the whole point of this is that Ramona and Scott are jerks. Like,
yeah,
they are not good people. They both do some pretty terrible things. I mean, like, I think Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, it's kind of meant to be a redemption arc for both of them.
Yeah.
Whereas instead of, like, defeating the exes, it's all about, oh, major spoilers, by the way. So, okay, let me ask this before I get into this. I'm talking a lot, but I know you're tired, so whatever, I'm going to keep talking.
Just for the listeners, I am very sick with a cold right now.
Yes. Yeah, that's why I meant sick. but did you know that this was not a straight remake before you watched it?
Well, okay, here's the thing. The only thing I knew about this when I started watching it is that you mentioned it in Discord.
Yeah.
And then that's it. You're like, watch this. It's really good. And then I don't remember who, but someone said it's different. But that didn't tell me anything.
Like, I deleted the person. I wanted to delete the person.
Chloe deleted the person.
I deleted their message because I was so annoyed that they just said, like, I'm writing, like, oh, this Scott Pilgrim thing is great. And I was being very vague on purpose. And then they respond, yeah, it's totally different. And it's like, oh my gosh, shut up. What the heck
actually,
are you doing?
It didn't ruin my enjoyment whatsoever.
Well, I'm not going to say it's going to ruin your enjoyment. But as someone, for me, sorry, I'm talking a lot.
Stop that. Don't say that. It's going to be so annoying cutting it out 8 times. I like when you talk.
I'm talking a lot, but I'm talking so much about Val. I just keep talking. I'm sorry that I'm just talking so much.
All my friends are so annoying.
Anyway, so when I first watched it, I did not know that because I had only seen the trailer, and they cut the trailer in a really clever way to avoid spoiling that. Mm-hmm. And so I watched it, and, you know, like, I expected a few changes, and I thought, like, okay, maybe they'll present Scott as maybe more sympathetic, and maybe Ramona would be a little less abrasive, and you know, just small changes. At the end of the first episode, you know, Scott dies, and
spoilers.
Or we think he, we already gave a spoiler warning. We think he dies, and oh my gosh, like I was genuinely like sitting there like, what the heck? What the heck? And I just kept saying that. It's like, oh my God. Like, they got me good.
I will say they got me too. I was very pleasantly shocked. So for me, actually knowing that it's different kind of saved my enjoyment of the experience. I've already told you this a million times, but I have a lot of difficulty rewatching and rereading things. Like, I can't focus, or I don't pay attention, and it's just like a moot point for me to rewatch or reread a lot of stuff. So the first episode was actually very boring because I've seen it. So when that happened, I was immediately like invested, like, whoa, hold on, this tickled my brain. So I actually really liked knowing that it wasn't a very close remake.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so good.
It's so good.
It's so good. And I will say, I do like that they keep in Ramona's dismissal of Roxy.
Yeah.
I think here in this show specifically, it definitely added a lot of depth. Like, a staggering amount of depth.
Unlike, you know, the original where Scott Pilgrim fights all the exes, kind of in this one, Ramona doesn't necessarily fight all the exes, but she definitely confronts
faces
them.
Faces off.
Yes.
Confronts is a better word for it, but...
Faces off. I mean, that's synonyms. And her face off with Roxy is an actual fight. And it's also, I think, the coolest fight in the
whole
series,
so
I would say.
It's so pretty.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
They're being knocked through different movies because they're fighting at a video store, which are things that used to exist before Val was alive or whatever, but
I'm 12.
Yeah, and each time they get knocked into a different movie, the style changes. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also really liked, so Ramona does not deny her sexuality in this one. She doesn't like dismiss it. She does it like she did in the movie instead.
Yeah, she does it differently. She does kind of dismiss it. She I remember that she says, she was my roommate. Like, she doesn't admit that Roxy's an ex.
They were roommates.
Yeah, and then Roxy was like, we weren't just roommates, excuse you.
Yeah.
And then she, like, owns up to it a little bit.
Yeah.
But she's still very dismissive of it. But in this version of it, it makes sense. I kind of liked that interaction. Versus in a movie, it's like a silly goof.
Yeah. It's much more sincere, and it's a lot more, like, I don't know, it feels like there's a lot more emotional resolution, which I think is kind of the theme of this show in general, is that it's, like, emotionally resolving so much that was left dangling in the original version.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you.
Yeah, ask me the question.
So, kind of jumping ahead here for a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you figure, like, how quickly did you figure it out that it was Scott himself that is doing this?
I mean, I definitely caught on to it before like the reveal that it was older Scott or old Scott, because there's old Scott and even older Scott.
Even older Scott.
I'm not sure quite when. I want to say, you know, it's 8 episodes, and I think the reveal is at the end of 6th episode?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it was at the end of 6th. I think around episode 4 or 5 is kind of when I was starting to be like, it's not any of these people. Probably, I was like, it's probably some time travel shenanigans, especially because I don't remember. Did they establish that time travel is a thing in this series? Or was
no,
it
I don't
movie?
Think so.
I don't know.
I don't think they established that at all. They just established the, like, the dreamscape thing.
Right. Oh, and in the movie, he uses a one-up. He doesn't travel back in time. That's how he defeats Jason Schwartzman. Yeah. Or Gideon Graves, I should say, aka Gordon Goose. Man, Jason Schwartzman knocked it out of the park, by the way.
He was so good. Oh,
I love him so much.
I love that they have the original cast.
It is astonishing.
Right?
That they managed to get all these people. Like, because so many of them, you know. Yeah, so many of them also have become so famous since the movie. Like, Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Brie Larson.
Aubrey Plaza.
And they got, like, Anna Kendrick to do, like, three lines, yeah. Which is crazy.
Like, they got every... I would have expected at least one of them not to have been in it. No, they got all of them. It's great.
And even some of the other cameos are pretty wild. Like, I'm looking at Wikipedia. They got Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. Cal Penn. Weird Al. It's great. Oh, and then the old Scott Pilgrim is Will Forte. And the young Scott Pilgrim is Finn Wolfhard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Him from Stranger Things. That guy. Yeah. So it is a stacked cast. I was super impressed.
You know what's very interesting? All of them do this thing where somehow their voice acting, it sounds very 2D.
What does that mean?
In the movie, they try to talk that way. It's very, like, punchy and comic-like, but it still felt like a movie, right? Yeah. It was very dynamic. Whereas for this series, for some reason, all of the dialogue to me, even though it was a dynamic dialogue, it sounded flat.
Yeah.
Which added a lot, I think, to the vibe of the whole show.
Yeah, so you're saying it kind of made it sound like it was a comic book panel.
Yeah. Because we clearly know that these people are vibrant actors and individuals with roles and whatever. Even like, so for example, Aubrey Plaza is probably the most alive in this role that I've ever seen her. Other than that awful gay Christmas movie that I actually kind of liked.
Oh, what was that called?
Christmas? No. The Holiday? No.
No, it was called... We need to do a what? We need to, like, do an episode. Have we done it?
I think we wanted to, and then we forgot
Happiest Season.
Happiest Season, that one.
No, we didn't forget to. It was because we wanted to do it, but we wanted to do it for Christmas. So we should do that this year.
Yes. Yeah. Let's do
that. That movie was so bad.
It was so bad, but it was so fun. I was, like, cringing the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like you're making the wrong decision. But getting back to this, everyone's voice acting here was very flat. And that's so intentional as well. It almost made it feel very nostalgic because of that. It kind of reminded me actually of Samurai Jack, weirdly. And like the Cartoon Network sort of tunes. I don't know, they just managed to capture the vibes immaculately. I really appreciate that small detail of it. Of just like, hey... Talk with less enthusiasm, please. That was probably a conversation they had.
And also maybe it was something about the sound design, something they do in terms of, like, I don't know, how they position the microphones and how they add, you know, various effects to it. They can do something to make it sound flatter.
Sound designers are not that important.
I'm telling Amanda, I'm writing her right now.
Amanda's gonna laugh at my jokes because she thinks I'm funny and charming.
Okay, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. And I have resisted sending her every single spider reel that I've come across so far. So I'm keeping up the good work. Are you actually messaging her?
I totally messaged her.
Okay. She's not going to talk to me ever again.
Yeah, you are dead to her.
Let's get back to this. This is actually very queer.
Yeah, there's also a character discovering the fact that he is... I don't know what his exact sexuality is, but he discovers he has some same-sex attraction. It's
He's not envy-sexual. He is every-sexual.
Like, man... I don't know how I could give up Envy Adams, but Yeah, I mean, he has to be gay to give up Envy Adams.
And I mean, fair,
Yeah, he ends up with Wallace, well, not ends up with, but falls in love with Wallace Wells, mm-hmm. who, and it's Todd the vegan, I should say, and he falls in love with Wallace on the set of the Scott Pilgrim movie.
Which is the Scott Pilgrim movie.
Yeah, it's Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life, I think is the title.
I think so, yeah.
Written by Young Neil, which, by the way, Young Neil, I really liked as a kid. Like, he was such a good character. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like in the movie, he was just such a non-entity, but in this one, it was hilarious when he was just like, oh yeah, the movie was written by my sleep paralysis demon.
Yeah, it's... The humor in this is very subtle and not really funny, but it's situationally giving me a very, like, sensible chuckle every single moment.
Yeah.
Which I love that type of humor.
Okay, what was your favorite joke? Because I've got one.
Favorite joke? Well, tell me yours first, and then I'll have to think about it.
When Gordon Goose, a.k.a. Gideon Graves, shows up on Julie Powers' doorstep... and is talking about how he's lost everything. And he says, I couldn't even get a reservation at McDonald's. They laughed when I called.
Yeah, that was really, really good.
Oh my God. I had to pause. I was laughing so hard.
It's just the delivery an excellent of it. Line.
Oh, it is perfect in every way.
It's one of those jokes that felt like if you know, you know, and everyone knows except for that guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think my favorite one was when Lucas Lee, played by Chris Evans, was caught dating the actor who played Knives.
Yeah.
So the headline was like, he's dating an actor who's playing a high schooler.
Yeah.
And he's like, I would never date a high schooler. She's 31. And it's so funny because that's the whole thing with Scott. He's dating a high schooler and he's like 23. And just the layers of that joke really made me giggle.
Isn't it a reference also? Because I think Ellen Wong was actually, you know, played Knives Chow. I think in the movie, she, you know, plays this 17-year-old. And
yeah, she's almost 40.
Yeah, she's a lot, and that was kind of the joke, was that, like, she is actually a lot older than she looks.
Yeah.
And so it was also referencing that.
It was just, there's a lot of little things like that.
There's layers
to that joke.
And also, I love the follow-up to that, where Lucas Lee was like, I guess my entire career is over. I really wish there was a word for that.
It was canceled, right?
Canceled.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, wait, did I get it wrong?
I guess the joke is that, like, canceling is not actually something. Like, I don't know. It's just very funny.
It's a lot of, like, I already said it, but it's such subtle humor within such, like, snappy one-liners. But I think my favorite part is just, like, what the plot of this show was. Which is healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the healing aspect of every single ex. I don't know, something about it was just very wholesome and wonderful. And the end of it felt more like a beginning versus an ending. For example, Kim, Scott's ex, who's the drummer in Sex Bomb, she had something going on with Knives at some point. Like, there were just... not just vibes, you know, like I said vibes 18 times this episode. Oh my God, I really am sick. But they had like a moment where they jammed together, and I've been paying attention to the blush on characters' faces.
Yeah.
And the characters only blush when it's a romantic connotation.
Yeah.
And Kim was blushing in that scene, and I was like, oh my God, what? And we kind of have Kim also exploring her sexuality here, because remember when Ramona and Roxy finished their fight and they're hanging out, and Roxy's like, so can we get back together? And she's like, no. Can we at least kiss? And she's like, no. How about you? And then Kim's like, no. Well, okay. And then they kind of like kiss and there's nothing, but But that happens after Kim and Knives have that jam session. And it's very interesting. I think it's very intentional because nothing in this cartoon is not intentional, even though it's very silly.
Yeah.
It's actually crazy how intentional this cartoon is. Like, every single scene might have a lot in it, but it has its own very specific point and space. And we don't see that a lot in shows.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any scene that was out of place or extra. It's very interesting. They did such a good job. This is very clearly a passion project.
You know what it reminds me of? Glass Onion.
Yeah.
Knives. Because like every little detail kind of, it all pays off. It all has meaning. There's not, every little thing matters.
Literally. We have so many foils of characters within themselves, around each other. For example, what's his name? Matthew?
Yeah.
Right? Is that?
Yeah, that's the first evil ex.
Okay. Yeah, so Matthew Patel and Gideon Graves have this whole rivalry thing happening. And in the end, they still very clearly do, but there's so much camaraderie, which in a sense is where they started too. They're part of the same, like, evil exes league, right? So there has to be camaraderie.
Yeah.
But it's like, their relationship was that they were a team and then they became enemies. And in the end, they reunited as a team again. And I just thought that was very sweet. Like, the amount of healing relationships in this show is just excessive.
Yeah.
Every single character, I think other than Stacy, maybe Anna Kendrick had like a project or something. I don't know. But every single character other than her had a lot of personal growth, even Envy, weirdly.
Well, what did Envy? I mean, Todd breaks up with her, but what else happens to her?
I mean, I would have expected nothing from her whatsoever for her to stay the same, but she took the breakup fairly well after Ramona talked with both of them. Like, surprisingly amicable, because she was ready to scorch the earth earlier, and then Ramona was like, hold on a second, let's go talk to him. And then they do talk, and he's like, hey, I'm having a crisis of identity, and I might not be straight. He didn't say it exactly like that, but that's the gist of it. And then Envy was like, okay, I'm out of here, instead of, okay, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah.
So I think she also had some sort of growth, weirdly. I might need to, like, rewatch it, which I won't. But I might need to rewatch it to catch maybe more subtleties within it. But there's definitely a little bit there as well.
Yeah. Okay, let me ask you a question.
Okay, I'm ready.
Gotta go, you know, this I feel like is the classic question, which is, who is your favorite evil ex?
Who is my favorite evil ex? Man, that's tough. I'm gonna say Lucas Lee.
Okay.
I really like the flashback to when Ramona gave him, like, a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
That was very sweet. I really like how he grows. I like that he loses his stardom, but in exchange for finding, like, inner peace, and he ends up being a barista, and it's really nice. I don't know. I like his whole arc, especially when he's hanging out with Gideon, and they're just having, like, bro moments.
A bromant.
Yeah. The 90 minutes that Julie is gone.
Oh my god, that episode, that arc was so good.
Yeah.
That moment where they destroy her house.
Mm-hmm.
Giving Aubrey Plaza a moment to freak out, always a good idea.
For sure. What about you? Who do you like the most?
So, I really did like Matt Patel putting on the musical version of Scott's Precious Little Life. I love a good musical. And I love that, I don't know, like, It was just all spectacle. I like that he, like, beat Gideon in that challenge and then realized that he hated it, actually, and gave it back up to Gideon. And, yeah, I thought Matt Patel goes through a lot of growth as well.
Yeah. It feels like for him, though, it's more of, like, a full circle sort of thing. He comes back to what he's passionate about, which is performance.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to see, like, a character arc where they rediscover a passion.
Well, I mean, the same thing happens to Gideon or Gordon, because he realizes he likes being evil, and at the
He loses his little like evil mojo.
He gets it, but he gets it back. He gets his empire back. And then him and Julie are plotting at the mid-credit scene. And so they're back to being evil, I guess. But like,
happy ending for everyone.
I think it's something actually really important. There's like an important message here, which is that healing does not mean necessarily that you heal into a better person.
No, you rediscover yourself and you're able to move forward.
You rediscover yourself, or you're able to move forward, or you're able to grow. But that, you're like, it doesn't have to be growth in the positive direction. Exactly. And I like that this show is like aware of that. I also really like old Scott and even older Scott, because I like that there is, I don't know, it's just nice to have. I really like it when media like acknowledges that like something beyond the like happy ever after ending, and then like learning that like, okay, the relationship was good, but then, you know, the problem is that Scott is still a jerk. You know, he was a jerk in the movie.
So crappy. I forgot about that.
Yes, he's awful, and he's not able to communicate well, and he
kind of drains the people around him in different ways.
He's a taker, not a giver, in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. He makes a lot of things about him, and it, you know, like in the movie, the way it ends, you'd think like, okay, well, they end up happily ever after, but no, like this tells you like, no, they get divorced in a decade. Old Scott goes mad trying to figure out a way to get Ramona back and comes up with this time travel plot.
Ramona's like, bro, you didn't even text me.
Yeah.
Not a single text in 10 years. And what
it's
the hell?
It's the same thing. It's the communication thing. He's not a good communicator, because he could have just, it's like, you just need to break up with knives. You just need to text Ramona. it's just like, just do these things. And he doesn't. And that's, I like that it's self-aware of that central problem with Scott in the first, you know, in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, actually, I immediately, like, episode 2, I was like, okay, Scott is doing it himself. But it really threw me for a loop for like, his reasoning. It was such, like, I don't know why logically it makes sense for that to be the reason that he's doing this. He is a very selfish man. But when I actually came to that part where they're like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this to get my wife back.
Yeah.
It was very, it did surprise me a lot, even though I the whole time fully believed it was Scott. And I really like that. They're basically doing very logical things. The plot is not revolutionary. There's nothing in it that's crazy out there. It's very procedural. Like, it's very, we've seen the story many times, right?
Yeah.
They're not doing anything that we haven't seen a million times, but there's a nuance to it that's very interesting, that even the most expected thing to happen feels very surprising and pleasantly so, which I really liked. Like, it's so stupid. The plot is just ridiculous. It's dumb. If someone asked me what this show was about, I'd be like, a guy is kidnapped and this girl who's known him for a day is looking for him. Like, okay, that sounds boring. That sounds like an action movie. Like, we've seen this all before. But it's very cool how they made it so interesting and fresh without changing anything. How? What? Writing, dude.
I like that. How? What? Writing.
And also, there's... Thank you. There's always also so many different types of relationships. Like, we have the guy who's in the band.
Oh, Steven Stills.
Yeah, Steven. Okay. Him and Knives are just, like, almost musical geniuses together. Like, they don't have to actually write good music, but you can see that they are equally passionate about it. And I don't think there's anything romantic there. But there's a lot of scenes in the latter half of the show where Kim is like in the background observing these two people collaborate together. And she looks at Peace and they look excited. And something about that is just so kind. I don't know, like it's really weird to explain, but they gave the space for different relationships to thrive.
Yeah.
And I really, really loved it. I think that's my favorite, actually, relationship in the show. It's Knives realizing that she's passionate about music, Steven being excited to collaborate with an artist who sees his vision, and Kim having a peaceful band life with people that she likes.
Yeah.
It's just so, like, it's neat. It's Coolio.
I totally agree. I agree. I don't know. I can't add anything other than I agree. This is a really good show.
What did you think about the inclusion of the movie subplot?
That's a good question. I thought it was interesting. I thought it, you know, presented some really good jokes because obviously you've got Envy, who is playing Ramona in the movie, and Ramona ends up being the
stunt double
for Envy playing Ramona, so she's her own stunt double.
And they make a joke about that too.
Yeah, there's so many, you know, like weird layers about it. Like, and then Lucas Lee is playing Scott Pilgrim, and you know, Ramona shows up and says, "We need to talk about Scott Pilgrim." And he's like, "I am Scott Pilgrim." and she's like, no, the guy you're playing,
it's a biopic.
It's so good. So I thought the movie idea actually worked pretty well because it like it gave an excuse to have a lot of the evil exes all in one place, and I think that was helpful because otherwise, you know, you don't really have a narrative reason for Lucas to be in Toronto when he's supposed to be a big movie star.
Yeah,
and you know, Todd should be off touring with Envy, and you know, like there's all so it helps to get them all kind of in the same space. And then, you know, I don't know, I really liked it, and I liked young that it gave young Neil also a chance to just be clueless about everything.
Yeah, he's just really passionate about that golf cart.
Yeah. What did he say that they were called in America?
Mario Kart.
Yes.
Ramona's like, I don't think that's true. He's like, how do you know? I'm from America. Well, that's what they call it in Japan. I don't think that's true either. Yeah, I don't know. Just like so many little exchanges between characters are very silly and funny and so inconsequential, but truly define their character.
Yeah, and I like the movie because it's supposed to be them making the original film because it's supposed to be... Yeah, this is the story from the original film where Scott defeats all the evil exes, and it was something that I guess old Ramona sent back in time. Mm-hmm.
Which is also very interesting. That's the way that she thinks this can be dealt with. That's how this problem can be solved.
I wasn't quite following what her plan was with that.
I wasn't either, but I think we're not really supposed to because it is...
Yeah.
It's just so very Ramona-centered. It's something that's only understandable to her, really. Because while Scott is selfish, Ramona is in her own world. Like, she's the sun and the moon and the universe of her life. So for her, that seemed like the logical solution, right? You fix it in a way... Basically, she was trying to revert it to the way that it was the first time before Scott changed it, right? Because it's assumed that Scott would have defeated Matthew, and it would have been the movie.
Right.
But he was kidnapped. So I think she was trying to reintroduce the idea of what would have happened.
Yeah.
But also, it doesn't make any sense, but Ramona also runs away from her problems, and she doesn't want to face it.
Yeah.
So this is her. The thing is, I personally was... both a fan and not a fan of the movie aspect. On one hand, it was so random and weird. But on the other hand, it's like it gives the space for all of the exploration of identities and the convoluted mix-up of cast. Like, everyone is Scott, and then we meet like three different Scotts, right? And then everyone is Ramona, and we meet a bunch of different Ramonas, the three versions of her. So there's a lot of that sort of thing where we're already primed for multiple copies and for multiple existences. But also, as you said, it gives the space for those actors to, for the actors, for those exes to be in the same place. It's really interesting. I didn't think about that aspect of it. So I'm a little torn on it because it was so weird, but it also makes so much sense and it opens up a lot of space for the humor of the show. So I think ultimately I agree with you. I think it was a really good decision.
Yeah, so would you say that to you is probably maybe the weakest part of, because that was going to be my question, like, what do you think is the weakest part?
I wouldn't even say the movie. I think the weakest part is the older Scott and oldest or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, anytime time travel is involved, it gets a little weird.
Yeah, I didn't care for that part, but it wouldn't be the show without it either.
Yeah.
So I think that's the part that I didn't like.
Okay.
But I didn't like is a strong word. I didn't mind it. It just didn't excite me in the same way that everything else in the show did. How about you?
Yeah, I think that I'm still going to say the weakest part was just the whole, why did Ramona have to send the script backwards in time? Like, what did that even mean? I don't know. It quite makes sense to me. But it was such a minor thing. I otherwise really, really liked it. It's such a small thing. Yeah. So I think we're mostly, this is a weird episode because we're just like, yeah, we agree on everything. Like,
yeah,
we don't have anything that we disagree on so
which
far.
Is weird because we argue constantly.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to pick a fight about something. So which Ramona haircut? I do like, okay, this is my favorite thing also, is that every, like almost every episode started with Ramona dyeing her hair.
It was so great.
The audacity that they only have 8 episodes. And so really when you think about it, what each one is maybe like half an hour. So they've got like,
it's less.
It's like 24 minutes.
But the 3 minutes at the end are credits. And the intro title is like a minute, so that's only 20 minutes.
So they've got 20 minutes, and they spend maybe like 5 to 10% of that, of every episode, for Ramona just dyeing her hair. And it's the exact same sequence each time. It's just different hair colors. It's amazing. I just love the audacity of them being like, nope, we're just going to make time for this. She's going to dye her hair. It's going to be a different color each time. It's the audacity of it. It's just amazing.
It's really great. I will say, every single time they did it, I was so excited for what colors she chooses this time.
Yeah.
And it's so pleasantly animated with like the shower curtain and then the washing the hair in the sink, the drain.
The cat.
Yeah. There's a lot of like tiny details. It feels very cozy and nostalgic. I don't know. Something about the show just feels like a little hug.
As someone who bleaches and dyes my hair, it was very like true to form, like a lot of us very true to like how the experience goes, where you're just like, I don't know, like you do it and you do the bleach and then like she misses some spots when she does the bleach. And I'm like, that's what happens when you bleach your own hair. You miss a few spots because you can't see what you're doing. And then like, I don't know, like at the end when the mirror is still foggy and she wipes it clean to see what it looks like. Again, that's something that I do every time when I dye my hair. Like you have to like, because when you know, have you ever dyed your hair?
Not myself.
Not personally. Well, like you have to be in the shower for like a long time to get all the dye out.
Mm-hmm.
And so inevitably your mirror fogs up. And so, you have to really wipe it clean. So I like that they included that little detail.
Actually, the mirror wipe, I'm really weird like that. The whole time I was like, she's going to have a streaky mirror. She looks like someone who would have streaky mirrors.
What is that? Are you judging her for her mirror cleanliness?
Yes. Oh my God. Okay. I might delete this part. No, I won't. Whatever. I'm not going to name any names or anything. There's like a cosplayer. I don't really follow any cosplayers. It's not my thing. But when you follow fandom content, a lot of stuff cosplay is gonna make it through. There is one that is very consistently making through the wall that I've built. And her mirrors are so dirty. And I cannot stand it. Because every single time she takes a picture of whatever cosplay she's doing, her mirrors are just gross as hell. And it irks me to no end. It actually genuinely infuriates me.
So if you were doing cosplay, you need to clean your mirror. Clean your mirrors.
Jeez Louise. Come on, people.
I say as someone who constantly forgets to clean my own mirror, but sure.
Well, your house, like your home is really clean.
Is it? Is it actually? I always think so. Yeah. I always think that like my home is kind of dirty and I'm very self-conscious about it. I'm like, it smells like cat or it smells like litter box. And I'm just
it
like,
does not. You keep it clean, okay. Chloe.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel like you don't see what it's like when no one's around, but like, I don't know.
Well, we see what it's like when we are around.
Yeah.
And it's really clean. So yeah, the mirror thing was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Fair enough.
Gross.
I mean, to be fair, when I wipe my mirror, I usually do it with a towel.
Exactly. Do it with a thing that absorbs water. She does it with her palm. It's a cartoon. It doesn't matter. But I'm like, ugh. She's one of those people.
It matters to you. Clearly it matters, though.
Matters so much.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about other than mirrors and the cleaning thereof?
Well, I think we kind of... Do you want to just talk a little bit more about the queerness element? I mean, we have Wallace who we haven't talked about at all. We have a little bit of a little more stuff with Roxy, I feel like.
Yeah. And then Kim and Todd.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think about how I approach this because it's like an interesting question because I think this movie... for a lot of people was like a very important, not the movie, I mean the graphic novels were very important part of like their nerd history, and so in that sense seeing like Roxy, this cool bisexual ninja being depicted, I mean maybe that means something to some people out there, but it doesn't to me because I never read the graphic novels. In the movie I didn't find Roxy to be, yeah, I don't know, she's kind of goofy in the... I mean, they're all kind of goofy in the movie, but I felt like Roxy especially. So, I don't know. I did like Wallace as this kind of suave, cool-headed, put-together gay man who, like, I don't know, sees Scott as almost like a charity kid. I do like Ramona says, like, oh, so you have a sugar daddy.
A what?
That was very good.
There is something about like Wallace being like, there's no such thing as sparks. And then in the end, he kisses a guy while he's in France and he has sparks. And it like, it's such an excellent cherry on top of the cake of like, is that the saying? Whatever. Of him being like, wait, sparks actually exist? Because he's such like a... he's such a detached and cold person.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do a lot of these little things. It's, once again, just a very, very warm show. Weirdly.
Even though it's set in the cold Canadian North, it's a warm show.
It is very cozy and warm.
Have you ever been to Canada?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been to Toronto. And... I think that's it. I think I've just been to Toronto.
Okay. I've been to Toronto, which shout out to Toronto. I had a blast there.
It's a great place.
I went to Thunder Bay, Ontario. And if you're familiar with Canada, you're probably like, why the heck would you go there? And the answer is that the Canadian government in college paid for our class to take a field trip to Thunder Bay, Ontario and learn about the local economy there, which we did. Saw the Bombardier factory, which was really neat. And then the Canadian government gave me like $20 to gamble in one of their casinos. And then I won $100 with it. and cashed it out in U.S. dollars. Whoa. So thank you for the $100 American, Canada. I really appreciate that. Canada rules.
I think you figured it out.
That's my Canada story.
It's a great Canada story. Whoa.
Yeah. Also, the drinking age was 19, and I went there when I was 19, so it was also, that was pretty cool, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you partied in Canada, gambling, alcohol.
I had one or two drinks because I was so nervous. It was also just like kind of nerve wracking to like go to a bar and order a drink because it felt like I was doing something illegal, yep. even though it was perfectly legal. And I was just I was so nervous about it that I like couldn't really enjoy it.
Oh, buddy.
Well,
so lawful.
I did have a drink or two, and then I remember I went to this, like, Canadian Subway equivalent and got a sub sandwich, and then I was talking with the guy at the sub shop, and I was just like, so do you like living here? He's like, no. and I was like, oh, okay. He's like, was there anything fun to do here? And he's like,
no.
And then he like stared at me. He's like, I guess you could go to the casino. And that's when I went to the casino.
That's excellent. Yeah. I hope that guy made it out of there.
Yeah. He was over it. He was over Thunder Bay.
The magic was gone for him.
Yeah, the thunder. There was no sparks from the lightning that caused the thunder to connect it back to sparks.
Getting back to sparks. I think we exhausted it. Literally, we just agreed on everything.
Is there anything we can argue about? Is there anything? I'm trying to think about something like mean I can say, but I don't know. I thought everyone did a good job, and I liked it.
And there were a lot of,
and the animation is really. I should mention the animation. Animation is soundtrack so cool. Rules.
The soundtrack.
We never talk about music.
Speaking of the Knives and Kim moment, that episode ends on Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah,
they were that's heavy-handed.
Yeah, I love this sound. Oh gosh, they had Johnny Cash and Vampire Weekend,
and they do and the nod Kennedys. To Black Sheep. Envy doesn't sing it; the crowd sings it. But that's such a good callback to it because we're the crowd.
Well, and Envy's the singing voice is Emily Haynes of Metric.
Well, in the movie, I think is Brie Larson.
Yes, yeah, but it's a Metric song that Brie Larson performs in the movie, so it's like it's kind of come full circle.
Exactly.
Yes.
What a good song!
It is such a good song.
Actually, Kylie Moore covered it too, and I also like her version of it.
All right, she was on your Spotify Wrapped.
Yeah, number 5, right after my napping music. Which, by the way, if you're listening to this, send us your Wrapped. Yeah. Tell us what you're listening to.
Go on Discord. Our Discord and post your Wrapped, because we posted ours. Mine was not surprising to anyone, but
Chloe was very consistent.
It was, yeah. Well, I don't know. Like,
it's not a bad thing.
The Mountain Goats released a new album this year. Of course I was going to listen to it a thousand times.
Of course.
But last year it was different. Orville Peck was my number one last year, so.
Yeah, that's also very not surprising.
Yeah.
But anyway, the music here is great.
Yeah, I love the theme song, which I don't know what the name of it is. Oh, it's Bloom. It's by a Japanese rock band, Necrotaki.
Okay.
It rules.
There's a lot of there's a lot of anime stuff in this too.
Yeah, isn't it like it seems to be animated by like a Japanese animation house, I think.
That would make sense.
Yeah, and I think that's being very true, because I think the original graphic novels were basically, you know, an American artist kind of imitating the idea of, like, you know, the Japanese manga that he was reading. And so it is, like, following a very tropey Japanese type thing where there's, like, you know, like, X number of evil things that the protagonist has to deal with, and then he can fight the ultimate evil. And it definitely is very inspired, I think, by a lot of like Japanese manga and anime tropes. Mm-hmm. So I think having it animated in that kind of style, again, kind of brings things full circle.
Yeah.
And yeah, it says here it was animated by Science Saru, which is a Japanese animation studio. Any final thoughts?
No, it was just really good.
Yeah, you should check this out. I mean,
I couldn't stop watching it.
A lot of it.
If you haven't seen it, why are you? Why you had to see it first? You just ruined it.
It's on Netflix. You know, I know it's harder to share Netflix now, but I don't know. Find a way to watch it.
There are ways, my friends.
The ways we shall not mention. Okay, so I want to mention we've got some social media. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is at InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. We have a Tumblr.
ThePodInMediaLez.tumblr.com.
Our website is InMediaLez.com. You can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com. And you can join our Discord. There's a link in the description. And
share your Wrapped. Share it with us.
Spotify Wrapped.
Spotify Wrapped.
The Apple Music.
I don't think Apple Music... does it?
No, our friend posted some kind of equivalent that kind of had like your top songs. And I think even, I don't know, I think YouTube also does something. So there's a lot. Whatever year end summary of media you want to post, feel free to post it.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much.
And we'll see you in the next one and the next one and the next one, just like Scott. What?
Yeah, there's 7 evil episodes. You have to defeat them all.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Yeah. Which I feel like that was a good way to end.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss new episodes. Also, it helps us grow, and we appreciate every single one of you who follows. And if you like us, tell a friend. Just be like, hey, these two lesbians are talking about other lesbians, gays, non-binary folk, and really queer people. Once again, thanks for listening, and we really appreciate you.